I took over 1,600 photos and some video clips while I was in Peru. Over 1,160 of them. Therefore, to keep from boring you, I'm only going to show you about 30% tonight. If for some reason I don't get that all covered tonight, then we'll finish it next Lord's Day evening. When I do show these, I'm going to have all the lights off, but if you have a question at some point, please raise your hand, and I would be more than glad to deal with that. So hopefully I'll see your hand. You may have to wave it or something like that, or even say something. Many of the photos I took were from my own research and investigation, and as I draw conclusions on some of the things that I took and some other studying that I need to do and other books I need to buy and so forth, I will present that material to you. So some of it is yet to come even in the future. I would like to say thank you to everyone who funded this trip, and thank you for your prayers while I was away. I appreciate that very much, especially because you know that I had we had a crash while we were there. And I didn't take any pictures of it, and I just got those pictures from a couple of other people this afternoon, so I don't know if I'll be able to show them to you or not, because I'm not all set up with those pictures, but I can always get to them. As you know, I went with the purpose of investigating the evidence for the coexistence of man and dinosaurs. I'm coming from the standpoint of what the Bible says about creation. And my understanding of creation, especially the first chapter of Genesis, Genesis chapter 1, is that the days of creation, and there were six, were each 24-hour days as we currently know them. And the Bible says that both man and the land beasts were created on the sixth day. If that's the case, then it would seem like, biblically as well as extra-biblically, there would seem to be evidence that would show man and dinosaurs being together. I believe there is biblical evidence, which I have not really yet presented to you before, and I hope to do that in the future. And I also believe there's a lot of extra-biblical evidence, both in literature, in archaeology, and things of that nature. And what I want to show you tonight, if we get to it, is some of the archaeological stuff that I saw. However, I didn't go by myself. I went with a man by the name of Dennis Swift, who lives and preaches in Beaverton, Oregon. He's not a member of the Church of Christ. Well, yeah, I take that back. We had a lot of talks. I roomed with him, and it sounds like he was at one time. And he was baptized in the churches, so this really shocked me. But he now preaches for the Church of All Nations. And also, there was a couple from West Lynn, Oregon, as well as a man from Dennis's congregation. We met up in Houston with a paleontologist from there in Texas who accompanied us to Peru. And Dennis himself is archaeologist and anthropologist and a bunch of other ologists. And then in a certain city, we met up with a man who currently lives in London, England, who is originally from Holland. And he is a mythologist and anthropologist and all kinds of other ologists. And both he and Dennis are involved in a worldwide effort to survey, catalog, and research the world's petroglyphs, of which I guess they said there are over 4 million of them. And many of them have common features in them, where whoever did these things recorded some things that happened in the heavens, in the skies, and so they're working on these things. This man's name is Tony, and he is an atheist, and he told us that. But later I'll tell you something that he read that we gave him, actually a copy of a book that I gave him, and I had to get another copy, and I had my own personal copy. And after he read that book, he made a startling acknowledgement that I'll tell you about later. Just completely floored me when I heard him give it. So I didn't go by myself. I went with other people. It was part of a package deal. And that meant that we were going to be doing some things that I really wasn't interested in doing. So I'm going to show you pictures of those things since I was there and did them because they're very interesting. And what also happened is that while I'm looking at these other things that I wasn't interested in and going to these other places that I really wasn't planning on going to, I think I made two discoveries. And I hope that proves to be significant if I'm right in what I'm thinking, because I went unbiased. I just was going there, okay, let's go. When are we going to get to the Ica stones that I want to see in the city of Ica? You know, we're going to Machu Picchu, we're going to the Nazca lines and all these museums and stuff. And then, what is that? And I took a picture of something. And I saw something else. And what is this that I'm looking at? So I hope that my unexpected find, shall I call them, helps them to be unbiased and objective. And while they have nothing to do with the dinosaur aspect, I believe they do still fit in with the creation concept. And that is that ancient man was as intelligent as we are. See, the creation model says that, the evolution model says ancient man was not as intelligent. He was not as skillful and so on as we are today. We're more intelligent, especially us Americans in the 21st century. Whereas the creation model says man was as intelligent in the past, as skillful and capable as we are today. And that we are as capable as they were in the past. And I'm wondering if, and that's a big if, and because it's a big if, I'm not going to tell you everything about it because I don't want to look foolish in case later I prove that I'm wrong. But if I'm right on these things, I'm thinking, wow, this just lends power to the idea that ancient man is as we are, or was as we are, and hence shows more about the fact that we've been created rather than evolved. And I'll say a little bit more about that when I get to those points. Also, again, I went there. I traveled 5,000 miles, and many of you gave funds for me to go on this trip. So when I finally got to places where I hoped to see the things that we wanted to see and couldn't, I wasn't very happy about that. One of the very first places we went to was the Aeronautical Museum in Lima, Peru. And they had a room all locked up where these Ica stones are supposed to be. And I'll explain more about the Ica stones later, and you'll see pictures of them. But they wouldn't let us in to see them, although we had an appointment at 11 o'clock that morning. And Dennis Swift confronted them about that, but they just would not let us in there. So I just thought, okay, well, no big deal. Several days later, we went to yet another museum. And they wouldn't let us upstairs, where Dennis has been before, to see more of this man-dinosaur connection evidence. They wouldn't let us up there. So we went through the museum, and we came out, and I said, you know what? I traveled 5,000 miles, and I've been trying to study Spanish. People gave me money to go on this trip, so I'm going to go back in there, and I'm going to ask them about that room. I'm going to put some pressure on them. So I went and confronted one of the workers and asked if I could go up to the room upstairs. No, it's not allowed. Well, why not? Well, it's just stuff from the Spanish period, or the colonial period is what she said. Well, I'd still like to see it. Well, it was damaged in the earthquake last year. Last year, Peru had an 8.1 earthquake. And yet the rest of this museum looked in perfect order. The display cases and glass were all in good shape. The mummies that we saw in there and everything was in good shape. Why is the stuff upstairs was all so damaged you can't let me see it? So I kept pressing and pressing. And pretty soon other museum workers are coming. And it was time for this pushy American to get out of there. So they wanted me to leave, and boom, they closed it, locked it up. And you can ask my wife, That is not Don Rule behavior. Usually if somebody says, you can't go over, they say, okay, no problem, and I go my own way. But I was just, I thought, okay, you got to be bold, brother. Get in there and do this. And it didn't pay off, but maybe it will someday in the future. Another piece of evidence that we could not see have to do with the Nazca lines. And at the Nazca lines, there are at least two dinosaur figures that they've put either on the, I think both of them are on the side of a mountain. And Dennis asked our pilots, because we went in two different planes, to take us over these dinosaurs, and they wouldn't do it. One of them, Dennis himself, discovered on an earlier flight. He's been there, I guess, 13 times. And I saw a picture of his discovery in the hotel where we were staying in Nazca. And if I had known that they wouldn't fly us over this, that I would have taken a picture of it there on the wall and thus shown it to you. Why are we not being shown these things? Well, there's a worldwide effort being made, not only on this issue, but anything dealing with the creation-evolution controversy, to silently push aside, bury, get rid of evidence that shows creation. And, you know, I've heard a lot about that, but I actually dealt with it myself this time. And so I like to call this expelled, no intelligent evidence allowed, kind of based upon that movie that is out right now. And also, I think what is going on with that particular thing is that Peru, in some areas at least, is a third world nation. And some of the tourism is in those very areas. If they start to acknowledge that the dinosaur man connection is true and here's the evidence, then the worldwide evolutionary scientific community is going to say, no, those things are fake. They can't be real because men and dinosaurs didn't live as contemporaries. And, of course, that would then say, well, the rest of the stuff is fake. So the Peruvians have something huge at stake, and that is money. They could lose a lot of money from people not going there and seeing these things. And so I think that's part of the reason as to why a lot of this stuff is being quieted. Okay, let me get this stuff out of the way here. And let's have the lights both up here and these here if we can. Oops, okay. All right, this right here is just the hotel that we stayed at in Lima, and we stayed there on several different occasions. I simply took this picture because I wanted you to see the traffic. You can tell that no one's going anywhere, and guess what everyone is doing? Honking the horn. All over Peru, they honk the horn all the time, and I don't know why. When you're driving down the highway, someone's driving your van, and there's no one else around except for a pedestrian on the side, they honk the horn. It's a constant thing, including during the middle of the night, which isn't all that exciting. We saw many people begging, and while this picture was taken of a woman from our van, when I did see people in person, so I couldn't resist. I gave money to them. So what you gave me, some of that went to help these people. And this is the Aeronautical Museum as we're walking to it, where we did see some interesting things and one Ica stone, which I'll show you in a moment, and where they would not allow us to see anymore. And this is the one stone they have on display. Obviously, they have it on display because they believe that there's some legitimacy to the Ica stones. And that's I-C-A, by the way, not Inca, like I-N-C-A, the Inca people. So they believe there's some legitimacy to them, just not the ones that have the dinosaurs on them. What is that? I don't know, but here's a drawing of it. If that can tell you what's going on there, I'm not really sure. You tell me later. Now, I've said that much of Peru is third world nation. Obviously, not all of it is. You can see the buildings there. Well, in fact, they even look newer than buildings in downtown Grants Pass, Oregon. And the cars look new. But that's in Lima. Here we are going to the first museum. And in here were just some things I thought were interesting, including some interesting creatures up here and down here. I'll give you a close-up of this one here. Probably just a lizard. Is this a lizard? Is it a dinosaur? Or would someone just call it a dragon? Who knows? Now, in other parts of this museum, they must have had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of ancient pottery where we couldn't use a flash. So some of my pictures were not the best. And this part where they had the dinosaur collection is in a very dark place. And I'm thinking, I just wonder if I took a few pictures if I'd get in trouble or not. And I thought, well, I wasn't feeling bold yet at that point with the flash is what I mean. So I kept my flash off, but I'll just show you some of what we looked at here. And also I wanted to show you some other pictures of pottery, just of us, some other things to show you it's not all about this. But you can see right here just shelf after shelf, and there were row after row after row after row of this sort of thing right here. And obviously some of it's so high you can't even get to. And here's more of where they had the potential dinosaur collection. If you've ever seen pictures of the Inca people, that is exactly what they look like right there, and that's what many of the Peruvians look like today, being descendants of those people. Okay, so here's some other pottery. You know, there's seashells, snails, more seashells, crabs, some kind of birds, cats, I suppose. One's got a fish in his mouth. Owls, some more birds. What is this man wearing? Was he wearing something that they had taken off a dinosaur? I believe that's a strong possibility, and I'll show you that with some Inca stones that I'll reveal later. Some more cats, just putting everything into context here. Frogs. So in other words, legitimate, fake? I don't think so. When we left that museum, sometimes I just took pictures of what it was like around the city where we were, just so you can get an idea of what it looks like, because it doesn't always look like that one picture where we had the skyscrapers. In fact, you're going to see a lot poorer conditions than this. Still traveling down the same road, you'll see a statue here of the Inca. They actually have their ruler was called the Inca. He was the Inca. And there he is up close. Then we flew to the city of Cusco. Cusco was the capital of the ancient, Inca Empire. And right here in the town square is where some of their palaces were located. But the Spaniards, when they came, they built their church buildings right on top of the palaces. Tore them down, used some of the stones to build their church buildings, and they got some materials from another location that I'll show you in a moment, just to perhaps further humiliate the people. And by the way, right here, we are at 11,000 feet in elevation. I was amazed by the differences in terrain that we encountered when I was there. We were on the coast, Lima, sea level. Here we're at 11,000 feet. We're going to go yet higher. We were in rainforest, and we were also on the driest place on earth, which wasn't too far from the rainforest. Other pictures of the same town square. And by the way, I always thought the timberline was at 10,000 feet, which I guess it is here in America because of the kind of trees that we have growing in the mountains. They don't grow any higher than 10,000 feet. But you'll notice here in the background, trees, which are over 11,500 feet in elevation. And they're eucalyptus trees. But they're not native to Peru. They're from Australia. All the eucalyptus trees that are there somebody brought from Australia, and why they planted them there, I don't know, but obviously they grow at high elevation. Yes? We didn't check into that, so I can't answer that question. I would assume that they do, because if you look carefully right here, you'll notice this door is open, and I think these doors are open over here, so I would say that they probably do. And here we're in a restaurant overlooking the town square, and so I just again thought you'd like to see that picture. And you notice here at the bottom, there was some kind of festival, a Corpus Christi festival going on while we were there. So people would be parading through the town here, playing music, and carrying these things here. I'm sure there's a name for it. And I'll hopefully show you some video of that towards the end, which I'm anticipating is going to be next week as I look at the time more. Okay, so here's the restaurant where we were. I just wanted you to see some of the meals that we're having. Of all the exotic things that I could have had that day, I got pizza. I've been hanging around Nathan way too long. Their drinks were interesting. They just had juices galore. I think I ordered here a strawberry with milk. I had banana with milk. Of course, orange juice. Indian fig juice. Papaya, guava. Mixed juices and all kinds of things like that. Do you remember the Duracell batteries that you could put your thumb on one end and your finger on the other and it would tell you how much of a charge it had in it? Remember that? This guy right here is the one who invented that. Alan O'Kane. He's the one who's from West Lynn. And this is Dennis Swift over here. Take it from another view. And Joe Taylor here is the paleontologist. And he was interesting because he was dressed like a Texan. He had his boots and his belt and usually his hat on and this big white beard. He was either confused as Santa Claus. Some people asked if he was a member of ZZ Top. And I was surprised he even knew about that in Peru. And of course they would ask whether he had a horse and all that kind of stuff. And everywhere we went, man, did he get stares. Because we're all taller than they were, and because of his beard. You just didn't see hardly anyone wearing a beard there, and if they did, it was very short. Very common there for people to come up and try to sell us things constantly, especially in Cusco. And this was our tour guide for the day who took us to a place I'll show you here in a moment. But before we did that, we went more into this Corpus Christi place, and there's something being displayed right here that I never did try, and I wanted to, but it just looked like too much food. But every restaurant we went into, at the top of the menu was guinea pig. And that's exactly what this is right here. Guinea pigs that they've roasted, and man, my mouth was watering. I wanted to get some of that, but I didn't want to get too full for all the hiking around we had to do. There's a close-up of one of those things again that I told you about. And looking off to the right from where I just took that last picture, you'll notice this flag right here. In America, we say, oh, that's the gay flag. But I wouldn't say that over there in a very macho society because that's the city flag of Cusco. And whether the gay movement here in America adopted that or what, I didn't want to tell them what it means in America. But anyway, there's another thing there. And then this woman came walking through the crowd. Huge carrots on there, as you can tell. And you'll notice her dress. She's not on display for tourists, but this is how many of the people dress, just like what you would imagine the Peruvians or even the ancient Incas dressing like. Again, you can see with these men's headdress, the city flag again. See any familiar people there? Barney, and is that Elmo? All right. Okay, I haven't forgotten that stuff. And they were just dancing through the streets. Here's a woman doing some weaving. Again, selling. Notice the graffiti in the background, which is kind of sad to see that was all over the place. Now, here's what is fascinating about Peru. These are ancient Inca, I-N-C-A, walls. And just notice how intricately they're made. And there's no mortar between these at all. And here's a close-up. And, of course, you notice the handprints here. But notice, you've probably heard before, you can't put a knife blade or a piece of paper between them. Look at this, how close they got it. And you'll even notice here that when there's a slight dip in the stone, that both stones match that dip. And this is the big mystery. And I asked Dennis Swift about this. Dennis, do we know how they made the walls of Machu Picchu? Which that's not what this is yet, but it'll be very similar. So do we know what they did? And he gave me several theories, none of which were the one that I'm thinking of that perhaps I may have discovered. And I'll talk to you about that later. Just a woman sitting on the side of the road there selling things. Is my lapel working, by the way? It goes off and on? Okay. I'll try not to get away from it. Do you have this mic on then? Okay. This here is called the Temple of the Sun, and it actually shows three different stages of workmanship. It all depended upon whether the Incas were doing it or the Spanish were trying to humiliate the ancient Peruvians and what was going on. And then turning to the right was this view here with the city of Cusco in the background. Now, I wanted to get this picture with these ladies for several reasons, just because of their colorful dress, but I also wanted you to see how short the people are. You know, I look like a giant standing next to them, and I am smiling, by the way, although my wife wouldn't think so. But at this elevation, it was very hot. And we're at the end of their fall, similar to the end of November here. And that's the way I'm dressed, at 11,000 feet. And that's because we're only 13 degrees south of the equator. Whereas here, I don't know what we are. We've got to be 39 degrees north of the equator or something of that nature. And, of course, I had to pay these ladies to be able to take my picture with them. Now we started to go up above the town to a temple site. And this is the town of Cusco. And, of course, right in the middle there is the town square where we were before. Here we are at close to 11,500 feet, and there's eucalyptus trees growing, as I pointed out to you before. Now, off in the background there is this place, and I asked them, what are we going to here? And they said, this is the name of it, Sexy Woman. We're going to what? We're going to Sexy Woman. Well, to me that sounds like Sexy Woman. And I'm thinking, how am I going to explain this to my wife? I need to make sure I get a picture of this, okay? But I found out the spelling of it, and in Spanish, that's just how it's pronounced. Sexy Woman. Okay, so we've now are in the parking lot, and you'll notice the parrot on top of the woman's head on the right. And, of course, they're there for picture taking also. And now we've started to climb up, and by the time we get to the top, it'll be 11,500 feet high. I never did get to go up here. We just ran out of time. I want it because there's more ruins up there. But again, here's these walls that there's no mortar between them. They've been put together so perfectly, and the question is, how do they do it? And some of these stones are large. You notice right in the center here, the people standing. And look how big these rocks are. And it looks like part of the wall is missing, doesn't it? I always noticed that, how you got this rock here and so forth. Well, it is. The Spaniards did two things. They filled in this area, so actually it went down a lot further. And also, they took the tops off to help build the church buildings down below. So who knows what it used to look like. And that's now turning, looking behind me from the other pictures where I was. And as we were leaving, I just saw this woman walking down a hill with her walking sticks, got a load on her back. She's actually quite a ways away, and I zoomed in to get a better picture of her. And we went to this other site, which seemed to be some kind of religious place. And here is another place that they were excavating. And our tour guide there has his hand on what they say was the altar. And then the priest on his throne. Interesting to see how they cut this rock. You can see the ledge down below, right down here, and then up above. It seems like they went to a lot of work or a lot of trouble. And this is underneath it now, then going inside. There's some ruins off in the distance. Kids are playing down in the grass. Nobody said anything about it. I just thought it was interesting to see that it's all over the place. And I also thought this was interesting. Here's these grooves cut in the rock. Does it go down further? Is this part of the area where the Spaniards filled in? I don't know. What was it used for? I have no idea. But that is solid rock. And somehow they cut those grooves in it. So now we're back in Cusco. I thought you'd just like to see a street scene, the cobblestone roads and so on, a lot like places in Europe. Of course, you can get your picture taken with this man for some money. And Joe Taylor, the Texan, he got his picture taken. And what this guy did is he took some of his stuff off and gave it to Joe. But Joe touched the wall. And this guy lets you know, don't touch that wall. They don't want you touching that wall for some reason. And again, it's a wall that is interestingly built. What's interesting about this stone is that there's 12 sides to it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And all these rocks fit around that. As we went walking out of that area, I saw this old man sharpening a knife, not watching what he's doing, but I have this feeling he's been doing it for a long enough time that he probably doesn't need to watch what he's doing. So I took his picture. And immediately with his left hand, he went like this. So I reached into my pocket, took out 2 coins, and gave them to him. Walked down a few shops, and here comes this guy back. And I'm hoping he doesn't have one of those knives in his hand. And he gave me one of the coins back. I had given him too much money. And I wanted to say, sir, if you have any idea how little this money is to me and how much money I have in comparison to you, I'd give you a whole lot more. But you know what? I think that would do damage. And I think it was just leave his dignity. He made some money and he was happy with that. Another 12-sided stone. Now we're on our way to Machu Picchu. And immediately as you leave the town and you get in this train, it starts to just go up one way and then it stops and backs up and goes up another track and just keeps going back and forth that way until you get up on top and then you go for 4 hours. And you're actually dropping in elevation. And these are pictures of some of the Andes Mountains. The Andes Mountains, by the way, top out at 23,000 feet. You know, the Rocky Mountains, I think, are very impressive, but they top out in the 14,000 range. And this is a picture of Dennis, and man, does he like to talk. He is extremely funny and very knowledgeable. I was surprised by his knowledge of ancient peoples and their culture and their languages and the dinosaur issue and so on. Now, as we would go along through this valley on our way to Machu Picchu, you would see ruins like this. Nobody says anything over the PA system, but there it is. I thought I would take a picture. And this is the place where we stayed in Machu Picchu, and was it ever a climb to get up to this place? I'll give you an idea. Here we are walking up to get to it, and that's just a place for the water to drain down the center. Looking back the other way, still climbing, I look back down the hill, still climbing, looking down the hill again, still climbing, looking up the hill, still climbing. And I tell you, here it's 6,800 feet high. So the modern town of Machu Picchu is to the right there, and then there's this river that runs through it, and all the mountains around are just like you can begin to see right here, and I'll show you more of that mountain there. Just very steep. Here's a place where we ate. You know, we're eating down here. You see the mountain behind, a place right there where a huge piece of it fell out. And I showed you how steep it was, and they get their supplies from the bottom to the top, just like these men are doing here. This plant was all over the place. Sometimes it would just grow right in a part of a branch and just grow up, and I just thought that was fascinating. Now, finally, when we went to Machu Picchu, you get in a bus, you drive down the river a little ways, and then you start taking these switchbacks up this hill, and all of a sudden you see Machu Picchu, and I'm looking out the back of the bus, and that's it in the distance. And now we're there, and all these next many pictures will be of that. I can't remember the name of this mountain right here, but there's actually ruins up there, buildings, and they let 400 people go up there at a time. I wasn't able to get up there, but I would have liked to have done that. And why the ancient Incas decided to build a city on the point of a mountain on top, who knows? But that's exactly how it is. The sides going down are just very steep. There's a close-up of that mountain there, and you can see some people standing right here. See here a building? Obviously some walls. There's walls all along here. I don't know if you can see those or not. And people up at the top. Why would you look at a mountain peak that's just like this and say, you know, we need to build something up there? They called that thing in the middle there the Temple of the Sun. They keep llamas there to keep the grass down. By the way, it was an American historian who discovered Machu Picchu in 1911. He had heard that there was probably a lost city. He went looking for it. And when he got there, it wasn't all cleared like you see it now. It was all covered with trees and bushes and vines and moss. And then he began the work of excavating it and just clearing everything out. Look up the hill. Notice how they cut grooves in the rock there. I believe it was for the transportation of water. This is where they would do their farming on the terraces. This is looking down, obviously, and just looking at one of the mountain peaks they would look at every day. You can see how rugged it is. And see that there's still water flowing. Here's our guide, but I wanted you just to see the background, what it looks like there. As we were looking at these things, Joe Taylor, that paleontologist, he just said, evidently, the ancient Inca people did not have the concept of, oh, that's too much trouble. Because they didn't think that way. If they wanted to do something, they did it regardless of the work. Now, what's going on here is that on one of these terraces, for some reason, they have dug down and found more of the wall. In other words, what you see, or you see something like this, and you see the ground here, but this wall here continues well below the surface. And then they filled it with soil, and that's how they would grow their items. So looking underneath now, you can see how the wall on the left side there went down quite a ways underground. Yes, but there hasn't been that much damage here to this place, at least not that I could tell. Just thought you'd like to see a lizard there. And I was also surprised to see growing at about 8,000 feet this begonia. Here we are in some homes, and what's interesting is here's where the ceiling would be. You can see how nice the walls look, and they covered it with something, some kind of yellow some stuff, plaster or something. But then up above, they weren't as careful with the stones because you didn't see it. It was all covered by the ceiling. And this right here looks like a poured wall, but it is not. It's a rock. It's a stone. And the path going down the side there, and you see someone behind the wall, well, that's the bathroom. And here I've gone down to the bathroom. I'm down at one end. Now back at the other end. And we noticed something that we thought was really interesting. I don't know if it's modern archaeologists or what, but all over the place, they've made these scratches on the walls. And our tour guide just simply said, well, they're checking to see if the walls move any or not. And I'm thinking, well, couldn't you have done it in a less conspicuous way? It just kind of took away from the beauty and grandeur of this place. This tour guide speculated that maybe they hung people here from this rock or other things. And there's water flowing down that channel there. And then it empties into this. Notice how much trouble they went through to get that really nice looking. Made steps out of solid stone. That's that begonia down there right in the middle. Most pictures that you see of Machu Picchu are taken from this site here back, looking at that big tall peak. I can't imagine being the guy who had to work on this wall right here. I'll give you another view of it there. You can tell how steep it is. They believe that this right here, Glenda, is an earthquake fault, and that they've not built anything right on it except for a walkway. And obviously they didn't use all the stones. Why they abandoned the city, we don't know. The Spaniards never found it. So they didn't leave because of the Spaniards. Now you notice in the background that there are some snow-capped mountains. While we're at about 8,000 feet and there's no snow, and we're actually very hot because the sun's intense. In the distance, those mountains are over 16,000 feet high that have the snow on them. And you see here where some of the stonework has started to collapse, and this is the only time that I ever saw that. Looking to the left, back to the right again, someone speculated that maybe there's a room underneath and it's giving way, and that's why that's sinking down. You've heard of the Southern Cross, the constellation. Well, I saw that while I was there. One night I just think to look up, and there it was. And here it is in stone, the top being the north, bottom south, east and west, and so on. And they must have used it for some particular purpose. Now, we've gone to the back side of Machu Picchu here, and I'm going to take a series of four pictures just looking down this steep place, one right after another, and you'll see how steep it is. They believe this was a sundial, and I wasn't really listening to the tour guide. I was too interested in taking pictures. But I saw him at one point going like this with his hands and got everyone else to do it, and they put their hands over it, and everybody said they could feel something. In fact, I got one man here from not part of our party doing that, and I didn't do it. Wish I had. They had a temple of the condor. There's three animals that were very important in the ancient Inca religion, the puma, the snake, I believe it was, and the condor. This right here, and then there was a natural rock formation that kind of reminds them of the condor. This is the right wing, and they built this wall on top of it. Why isn't it sliding down? I can see some rocks that they have underneath here like shims, but the weight of this seems like it would just push it down. I don't understand. And this is kind of a bigger view of it. This is the head right here, his frill, the body, and then his wingspan just opened up. And then, the next picture, I'll take a peek underneath here. Obviously, they weren't finished building this here. These stones, you know, that workers would bring them here, and then others would use it to put on top. And I've built rock walls before, so I know that's exactly what you do, and you have a space around there so you can move around. This, I believe, is a key to the building of the walls there in Peru, whether it was at Machu Picchu and Cusco or other places. When I looked at this rock, I said, oh, very interesting, this rock and these lines and what's going on down here and up here. But at this point, the tour is over, and I've actually separated myself from the group, and I wish I could have communicated with them because I really wanted to study this some more. But I'll, in the future, tell you more about this rock and some things that I'm thinking in relation to that. And when I get done showing these pictures of Machu Picchu, I still have tons more pictures to show you, and so we'll just do those next Lord's Day evening, Lord willing. Another look so you can see how steep it is down there. There's a river down below. I'm guessing it's at least 1,000 feet down there. And we're leaving at this point. Okay, well, let's have the lights back on. It's 5 till 7, and I could just keep on showing these to you all night, but I know you didn't come expecting a really long service tonight. But what we want to do right now is offer an invitation to you, and I want to invite you, please, to come back next week because I need to show you the Ica stones. Very important. But if anyone is here tonight and does have a need for the invitation, if you have a prayer request or some other way that we can be a blessing to you, please come forward now as we stand and sing.